going to encourage the development of new innovative technology for Arctic operations that are both economic and environmentally sound. That's really important.
The federal government proposes new Arctic drilling standards. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, UAA regents propose a 5% tuition increase.
This is what the market will bear, I think. It will contribute, it will help.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The Department of Interior today released proposed new Arctic-specific drilling standards for offshore oil exploration. They would require an Arctic operator to have a well cap at hand, but more controversially, a rig on standby that can drill a relief well within 45 days if there's a blowout. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
The idea of drilling standards to suit harsh Arctic conditions was spurred by Shell's calamitous 2012 season, which included equipment failures and a floating rig running aground. Brian Salerno, Director of Interior's Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement, says the standards are similar to the permit conditions imposed on Shell during that season, with some additions.
There's a lot of commonality with what is proposed in this rule, with what was done by Shell and what is currently being discussed with Shell.
Shell is the only company now planning to drill on the outer continental shelf off Alaska, and it hopes to return to the Arctic this summer. The new rules would apply to future exploratory drilling in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. They won't be final in time for this summer's drilling season, but Salerno says many of the features will be part of Shell's permit conditions this year. Shell spokeswoman Megan Baldino says the company supports regulations that promote safety as long as they're clear and well-reasoned.
Regarding the relief rig requirement, DOI is clear that use of alternative equivalent compliance measures may be approved. And we think that flexibility is really critical. It's going to encourage the development of new innovative technology for Arctic operations that are both economic and environmentally sound. That's really important.
Shell has said that having a relief rig on standby would cost $250 million a year. The requirement to have a relief well within 45 days after an incident would allow the company to park a rig in Dutch Harbor, an estimated 20 days away from Shell's lease areas in the Beaufort Sea. Or the rules would allow what Shell has proposed for the Chukchi this year, two working rigs, each serving as the standby for the other. The rules also say a company may be able to avoid having a relief rig at all if it can show that other technology provides the same protection. Marilyn Hyman was the Alaska policy advisor in President Clinton's Interior Department. She now works on Arctic Ocean Protection for the Pew Charitable Trusts, and she's rasping through a cold. Hyman says she likes the proposed standards, especially the time limits.
The big differences are the requirement to have a capping stack in place within 24 hours, a requirement to have a containment system in place within 7 days, and the requirement to have a relief rig readily available to drill a relief well.
The rules don't set end dates for drilling, but they say it has to stop before seasonal ice returns, and they require the operators to conduct ice tracking and forecasting. Hyman says the 2010 Gulf spill proved a relief drilling rig is indispensable.
Because if the capping stack doesn't work, or if the containment system doesn't work, we know in the deep water horizon, they needed a relief well to actually control the blowout. And so I think that's a critical piece of this.
Other environmental groups, including the Sierra Club in Oceana, praise the draft rules but say Arctic drilling remains too risky. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she's reserving judgment until it's clear the rules won't deter investment. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The University of Alaska Board of Regents today voted 8-2 in favor of a 5% tuition increase in an effort to gain ground on the university's budget shortfall. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
The tuition hike will bring in about $5 million more dollars to the university. The Regents considered a 4% increase last fall, but opted against it. Board of Regents Chair Joe Heckman says circumstances have changed drastically over the last few months.
Our fiscal picture has completely collapsed around us.
The university system is facing about a $28 million shortfall in the current fiscal year and anticipates further cuts in the next budget cycle. University of Alaska President Pat Gamble says the tuition increase will help close that gap, but it's not the full solution.
The amount that it would take through tuition to solve whatever the final number is would be astronomically high and unacceptable. So this is what the market will bear, I think. It will contribute, it will help.
President Gamble says the university needs to explore other potential revenue sources. He says one thing the university needs to emphasize is student retention.
If I have a student who's unprepared for freshman college work, they come in and flunk out in the first semester, okay? If I can't keep that student in, the average student takes 5 years to graduate these days, okay? I just lost 9 semesters of tuition when that student flunked out. Now, that's money. That's real money.
Gamble is also considering more out-of-the-ordinary ideas.
As a land-grant university, we didn't get the land, but we're looking at an initiative to possibly work something out where we get the equivalent of the land grant through resource development, a fraction of what resource development the state does in the future. And that fraction would go into an account that would go into capital projects for the university.
That proposal is similar to one in Texas that Gamble says has been successful. The university has introduced potential legislation to Alaska lawmakers to see if the state would be interested in a comparable system. The tuition increase will bump undergraduate classes up between $8 to $11 per credit hour and graduate courses up between $20 and $22 per credit hour. The increase will go into effect in the fall 2015 semester. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
Governor Bill Walker's nominee to the Board of Fisheries has withdrawn his name from consideration. A spokesperson for Senate Majority Leader John Coghill's office confirmed the withdrawal of Dr. Roland Ma, but couldn't provide additional details. Ma went through the first half of his confirmation hearing before the Senate Resources Committee on Monday. His confirmation has been mired in talk of the tension between commercial and sport fishing interests in the state. Ma's nomination saw strong support from many commercial fishermen and wariness from many charter groups. Ma could not be reached for comment. Walker will now have 2 seats on the Board of Fisheries to fill by April 1st. An Anchorage man was indicted by a grand jury this week on multiple charges involving sex trafficking, sexual assault, and weapons misconduct. Xavier Linnell Cook Benson is facing 12 counts related to what law enforcement officials allege in a written release was a brutal and exploitative sex trafficking and prostitution operation in Anchorage, Juneau, Kenai, and Fairbanks. Adam Alexander is an attorney with the state's Office of Special Prosecutions. He says Benson will have to meet a high bar to get out on bail.
He would have to post $100,000 cash on the performance bond. He would have to secure the assistance of a bail bondsman on the cash corporate appearance bond. And he would have to propose a third-party custodian to the court for the court's approval.
Alexander says investigations such as this that involve Anchorage police and the FBI are complex and often long-term.
The commercial sex trade is in many cases fueled by physical and emotional exploitation, and people oftentimes, and I'm not speaking to Mr. Benson here specifically, but people oftentimes who operate prostitution enterprises target vulnerable people and at the same time are becoming increasingly sophisticated.
If convicted, Benson faces up to 60 years in prison. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new version of the state budget restores funding to help the homeless.
At a time where the state's economic troubles are making life harder for others, it's really critical that we provide that safety net.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Advocates for the homeless in Alaska are rejoicing after Governor Bill Walker this week released an updated budget proposal that restores funding for housing and homelessness services statewide. The governor had initially zeroed out the funding in light of the state's multi-billion dollar shortfall, but the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness leaned on the administration to restore it. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
It's mid-morning at the Glory Hole, Juneau's emergency homeless shelter and soup kitchen. Ralph Jackson and his girlfriend are sipping coffee and waiting for lunch to be served in a couple hours. Jackson says they've been homeless for about 9 months, ever since they got kicked out of an apartment in Petersburg for what he says was a trumped-up noise violation. He says the Glory Hole is the first place to really help them out.
They're giving us some insight, you know, as to what kind of jobs we can get, and housing especially.
Jackson says he plans to apply for a dishwashing job at a Juneau restaurant, and he says he and his girlfriend hope to get into subsidized housing.
We're on a waiting list, and it's 6 months to a year. All we can do is just wait.
In the meantime, Jackson says they're grateful for the Glory Hole's services. In addition to help finding jobs and housing, the shelter offers free meals and a warm, dry place to hang out when it's cold and wet. Executive Director Maria Lovishuk says those services would have taken a $96,000 hit under Governor Walker's original state spending plan. She says that's about a fifth of the shelter's budget.
If we did not have that funding, it would be really, really devastating because we already operate on a very bare bones budget, and I think we do utilize all the funding sources that are available to us really, really efficiently.
The governor's amended fiscal year 2016 budget funds the state's basic homeless assistance program at $7.7 million. In recent years, that program has covered operating expenses for nearly 40 service providers statewide and helped thousands of homeless individuals and families. The updated budget also includes $1.5 million for special needs housing grants aimed at helping nonprofits and developers build affordable housing for low-income Alaskans. Sue Steinecker is director of NEST, the Nome Emergency Shelter Team, which gets about two-thirds of its funding from the state.
At a time where the state's economic troubles are making life harder for others, it's really critical that we provide that safety net.
Under the initial budget proposal, Steinecker says there was a real possibility the shelter would have closed.
Given that the governor has put this money back, I feel much more confident about next winter and the shelter having enough operating funds.
Scott Schombor co-chairs the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. He says members mobilized to make sure Walker's office knew the importance of the funds to homelessness programs across the state.
It's not something that the coalition has had to advocate for in the past, there was some scrambling, as you would imagine.
He says their message was simple. In a state where affordable housing is hard to develop and doesn't exist at all in some communities, many people rely on shelters.
It's everything from the chronic homeless population that have been kind of living this lifestyle for a long time, but it's also a lot of families who just typically need some rental assistance to make sure that they don't become homeless.
In a release, Walker's budget director, Pat Pitney, said taking the homeless money out was an unintended consequence of submitting a stripped-down capital budget. She called putting it back in a cost-effective way to address issues that could be costly for our communities, including money spent on law enforcement and social services. Schombor says the coalition also met with lawmakers in recent weeks. As the legislature continues to craft the final budget for next fiscal year, he says it's an opportunity for the group to talk about the importance of homeless services statewide. In Juneau, with help from Matthew Smith in Nome, I'm Casey Kelly.
The Anchorage School Board unanimously passed next year's $784 million preliminary budget at their meeting last night. It includes money for giving equal planning time to all middle school teachers and supplements the language immersion programs. But until the state legislature passes its budget, this one could still change. KSKA's Ann Hillman has more.
The school board voted to redirect $2 million away from a technology upgrade fund in order to reinstate team planning time for all middle school teachers, including elective teachers. Board member Betty Davis said the middle school model works and needs to be followed.
I prefer that the money go towards the students rather than towards things at this time.
The money pays for an additional 20 full-time middle school teachers. The administration says they will continue to collect data on the effectiveness of the middle school model. $150,000 from the same technology fund will be used to hire teachers for primary school Chinese and French language immersion programs. In total, the preliminary budget adds in more than 60 new teaching positions. However, ASD's final budget will depend on the state legislature. Governor Bill Walker has removed some one-time education funding from his budget. That could leave the district with a $12 million shortfall. Board member Pat Higgins says the budget is not yet final.
And I look forward to really addressing more issues later in late April. Once the legislature gets out, that's when we really finalize the budget. So for those who think this is it, it's a long way from it.
The district is required by the municipal charter to submit a budget to the Anchorage Assembly for approval by the first Monday in March. Board member Kathleen Plunkett said this early deadline forces them to review the budget twice, which is inefficient. She's looking to change the charter. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Iron Dog Snow Machine Race gets underway this weekend, and there are some changes to the race route, which takes riders from Big Lake to Nome and then to Fairbanks. Iron Dog Executive Director Kevin Kastner says the course had to be altered between the villages of Galena and Koyukuk.
Because of the open water in the Yukon, there's a lot of theories of why both weather conditions but also just post-flood seems to be affecting how the river freezes there. So it's about 2.5 miles we had to go around. It seems that it's only adding about 9 or 10 miles to the overall distance to the trail.
Kastner says volunteers have marked the new route for racers. He says snow along the west coast this week has improved overland trail conditions there, but the sea ice remains unsafe.
Our plans are to go overland in all those locations, but, you know, avoiding the sea ice at all costs.
Kastner says trail conditions are rough on the west side of the Alaska Range with minimal snow, and there's concern about snow machines overheating. The Iron Dog has a ceremonial start in Anchorage tomorrow and a restart in Big Lake on Sunday. There are 37 teams in the pro class event. Among them are several past champions and two women. Also of note, dog musher Sonny Lindner of Fairbanks is competing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Alaska Pacific University is proud to announce the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. Deadline to apply is March 1, 2015. Alaska Pacific University, a private nonprofit committed to personalized experiential learning that incorporates Alaska as its principal classroom. More at 1-800-252-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Lisa Fu. This week on AK, tracking halibut. Pacific halibut are one of Alaska's most valuable fish, but we know surprisingly little about what happens to the species during an important time in their life, their spawning period. Amanda Compton caught up with a study in Glacier Bay focused on just how halibut spawn using a special type of tracking equipment.
What would you do if you lived hundreds of feet below the ocean surface? Where would you eat? When would you sleep? where would you procreate? Julie Nielsen is a PhD student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
I'm studying the movement of halibut in Glacier Bay. There's a lot of questions about how they move relative to the park boundary, whether they're moving in and out or whether they remain inside the bay.
Fisheries are managed under certain assumptions, assumptions that determine whether a fisherman can support a family, if a consumer can buy a fish at the local grocery, and how much tourist traffic enters the state. Halibut are managed as if they spawn every year and move freely without preference to localized areas. But are these assumptions true? To try and answer this question, Nielsen attached 25 fish in Glacier Bay with satellite tags in the summer of 2013. The tags are programmed to release on two specific dates, one the following winter and one date a year from when the fish were tagged. Nielsen said the tags hold clues to figure out where fish go on spawning migrations, and finding them is a lot like detective work. Most of the tags scheduled to release in February 2014 popped off as expected and began transmitting their locations to satellites.
The idea was if the halibut have gone on a spawning migration, their tags would pop off outside the park.
All the February winter release tags transmitted locations within the bay.
I didn't expect that at all. I thought we were going to find some that were out in the Gulf.
To find out more than just where the tags surfaced, Nielsen had a critical priority. She needed to physically recover the tags, so she asked for help. There was a $500 reward for finding a tag, and she made maps of their locations to within 100 meters. People kayaked, ran, took skiffs, and one guy even flew over to a spot where a tag was located. But a whole other set of tags were set to release in the summer of 2014. Nielsen's PhD advisor had been out with her just days before the summer release date.
My name's Andy Seitz. I'm a professor of fisheries at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The last 4 days we've been out on the research vessel tracking halibut, so we can hopefully recover these satellite tags when they pop up and float to the surface of the ocean.
For the summer tag recovery trip, Nielsen had rented a special tag locating device, as Professor Seitz explains.
It's called a goniometer. It's a glorified radio direction finder.
Seitz returned to Fairbanks, where he would have internet access and communicate with Nielsen over a satellite phone. On June 30th, Nielsen and two colleagues headed north into the bay to be poised to retrieve the tags. Shortly after 4 p.m., the goniometer began picking up a satellite tag signal.
Okay, 30 degrees. It's going to be a white float on it, so hopefully it'll stand out.
We have eight eyes.
We have a tag number for you. One.
A tag had surfaced and successfully communicated to a satellite, allowing the Park Service to access the location of the tag's transmission.
Hopefully there'll be more.
We're about 6 miles away from it.
Feeling right now.
Very excited. It's a treasure hunt.
The bobbing white styrofoam head of the tag was spotted on the east side of the bay.
You guys got it?
Starboard.
There it
is. Nice! We find it.
The rest of the trip brought more success. Over half of the tags scheduled to release were retrieved. These days, Nielsen can be found in her office, fittingly located above a coffee shop. The rest of her work involves long hours at her computer. She's pretty blunt about the road ahead.
There's going to be a lot of pain involved. We have the detailed data sets for 11 tags. It's almost half of the tags. It's an incredible number.
Nielsen's findings suggest a majority of the fish prefer the comforts of Glacier Bay, either remaining inside of it or leaving and returning, one to within 1 kilometer of where it was tagged. She's currently working on a movement model that she hopes will indicate where the fish that left the bay actually went. The model would ideally assist researchers in mapping the movement of other species besides halibut, like sablefish and Pacific cod.
I want to give people the ability to figure out where fish go so they have the best information available for the management of the species. That's really what I'm about.
But will they have as much fun collecting that data?
How about four?
In Juneau, I'm Amanda Compton.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Douglas, a former gold mining town that's now part of the Juneau borough, but still maintains its unique character.
My name's Ed Schoenfeld, and I've lived in Douglas, Alaska, about 30 years, which some people would say is way too long, but I say is not anywhere near long enough. Well, Douglas has a wonderful view. We're right on Gastineau Channel, which is the body of water that separates Douglas from the mainland. And So we're looking right across at mountains, Mount Roberts, Mount Gastineau. We're also, as I said, on the channel, and that means we get lots of seabirds. We get orcas up here, occasionally a humpback. Well, I think the longer you've lived here, or if you're just into that sort of thing, you see it with its own identity. We joke that Douglas is a state of mind, and that gets sort of expressed creatively and sometimes strangely. For example, Juneau has a 4th of July parade. A couple hours later, Douglas has a 4th of July parade. There was a sign on the bridge that connects Juneau and Douglas, which is called the Douglas Bridge, for a while, saying, entering the People's Republic of Douglas, passport check ahead. And you could actually get a Douglas passport. There were some bumper stickers put out a while ago. It said, Welcome to Juneau, Gateway to Douglas. So it sort of has its own identity, but there's a lot of sense of humor with that.
So does anybody here live in Douglas? And it's short.
Ed Schoenfeld is news director for Coast Alaska. He's also a musician who's written half a dozen songs about his community.
Don't like it downtown, 'cause it's too sunny. Don't like the valley, costs too much money. Don't like that Auk Bay, 'cause it's too far away. Douglas, they made it just for me. Sing along if you know it. I live in Douglas. I live in Douglas. I live in Douglas.
300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Amanda Compton, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Lisa Fu.
We've got a convenience store. Get gas for your car. We've got a library. We got a beauty shop. What the hell else do you want? Everybody sing! I live in Douglas. I live in Douglas. I live in Douglas. I live in Douglas. I live in Douglas.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Shady Grove Oliver in Homer, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Ann Hillman in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. From resource issues to recreational activities, APRN brings you the up-to-date information you need for life in Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.